This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Oh, I got to go through an exercise here, Seth. I didn't do this because the press conferences after the game last night, the Rockets lose 109-106 to the Warriors. I didn't watch any of the press conference footage from either team. They just let in on first take. You know, they do a montage at the beginning of all the topics they're going to be hitting. You know, highlight here, highlight there. The very last thing before they cut to the wide studio shot to welcome everybody in, Draymond saying something at his press conference and getting up and walking off.
Oh.
I can only imagine what it was, given the fact that Jalen Green chose to throw shade at Draymond after Jalen scored 9 points in a loss in game three. Earlier in this playoff series. So I got to go see what Draymond said. I'll do that maybe during a break and see what he said.
Somebody would have said something to us about it if it was specifically about Jalen at this point.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe so. 713-572-4610 if you want to say something to us. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. So the Rockets last night, I think the biggest, as I go back and do the autopsy on this thing, to me, The biggest reasons they lost this game last night, the three biggest reasons, an inability to shut down the Warrior, just a complete shutdown for the first four and a half minutes of each half. They gave up a 16-4 run to start the game. They gave up an 18-1 run to start the third quarter. That's a 34-5 run collectively over 9 minutes of the game coming out of both locker rooms, you know, first half and second half. Inability to make free throws. I don't know if that gets fixed. I think the first thing can get fixed. Come in more focused. Come in, you know, that 34-5 stuff is on Ime a little bit there. Like your team coming out of the locker room both times, getting run off the floor early in those games. The free throw thing, I think, is just something you're just going to have to drink through it. You know what I mean? Like you're just going to have to start taking some sedatives or whatever. Not you, Seth, unless you want to. You, the audience. 19 of 31.
Been there.
19 of 30.
Already done.
What did you say their percentage is for this series from the free throw line?
It was 63%.
63%. That's right. Yeah. 63%, which is right in line with last night. 19. They missed 12 free throws last night. Conversely, if you're wondering, the Warriors, 20 of 22 from the free throw line. And Jimmy Butler did not miss down the stretch in this game. Jimmy Butler was basketball heroic in this game. The third thing for me was Alperen Şengün.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. The third thing for me is Alperen Şengün having one of the worst 30-point games I've seen a Rocket have in the postseason. And I say that because he was dynamite when Draymond Green left the game with foul trouble. With 8 minutes to go in the third quarter, Draymond gets his fifth foul. So he's gone for 12 minutes of the game. He doesn't come back until there's 8 minutes left in the game. Alperen Şengün went to work, which is what you should do. So good for him for doing that. He scored 17 of his 31 points in those 12 minutes. The problem is, over the course of the other 30 minutes he was in the game, he played 42 minutes. Over the other 30 minutes in this game, when Draymond was in the game and covering him for large portions of that, he was 6 of 18 and scored a total of 14 points. Scored 14 points in 30 minutes with Draymond in the game, a guy that you are running your offense through. They made a point to make him aggressive last night, and you scored the other 17 while he's out. That 17 is great in the 12 minutes. The other 30 minutes are a huge reason they lost this game.
And on the final play or the final chance that they had was Şengün taking his little baby hook to try to even it up. He gets shut down by Draymond Green.
Yeah.
And on that play, the Warriors did everything right and shut down every option that the Rockets had on that. They're a very good defense. They have been ever since Jimmy Butler got signed. So I know the score is tight. But the multiple times in that game where it just became obvious that, all right, these guys just are not the same when it comes to playing in the playoffs or in crunch time or when it comes down to the truly gritty part of the game, they're not there yet.
Mm-mm.
Jalen Green has only been once out of four games, and it was at home. He's been just completely shut down otherwise. So and Jalen Green turns the ball over five times last night. It's That's the most frustrating part. Yeah, I'm like Şengün. It bothers me and annoys me that he scored as much as he did because it was relevant and it mattered, but it just was not the actual impact that he had, that he needed to have when Draymond Green was on the floor.
Yes, 100%. We're getting these texts again. We got them earlier in the show, and I get the frustration. I get the frustration with Jalen Green. We're frustrated with Jalen Green. The comparison that to me, when people are just lumping Jalen Green in with James Harden, is no. Like James, and you're putting us in a position where we're sticking up for James Harden. Like Jalen Green,
yeah.
Jalen Green is James Harden. James Harden, like regular season great, playoffs ghost. James Harden had some legendary playoff failures in individual games. Jalen Green hasn't been Corey Brewer yet in this postseason. Like Jalen Green
shown up in one of four games. Harden was good in the playoffs, except for when it really, really counted.
Yes.
Jalen, was last night? I'm sorry, I didn't realize. Was that an elimination game? Is this a four game series we were playing? Right. Or a five game series? No. Jalen Green hasn't showed up but for one game.
Yep.
And then he's been held to single digits in the other three games. James Harden played 85 playoff games for the Houston Rockets. He scored in the single digits zero times.
Yeah.
Like, for all of his faults in the playoffs and in closeout games especially, or elimination games especially, no, by and large, he was still very effective in the playoffs. Yeah. He wasn't as good as you want him to be. But to put Jalen Green in any kind of a conversation to where he's approached anything close to the level of James Harden, that's just ridiculous. Yeah. That's not even – he does not deserve to be in any – and that's not even an insult to Jalen Green. I think he would tell you that.
Right.
He hasn't even scratched the surface of being in that conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's where it steers us, is sticking up for Harden. I understand what people are saying. Like, the frustration you're feeling with Jalen Green is the same frustration you were feeling with James Harden when he turned the ball over 12 times against the Warriors in 2015 and it knocked them out of the playoffs. I understand where it's coming from. Jalen Green – he hadn't done squat. You know, the 38 points in game two was great. It is more than canceled out by the fact that he has been a gigantic no-show for somebody that a lot of people were sticking up for. Is this is the guy. Like, this is the best guy on the team. Look at how his game has rounded into form. And I was impressed with some of the improvements that Jalen made in his game during the regular season, pointing out that the postseason is going to end up being very different for this entire team because of the way that postseason basketball is played, the intensity, the slowdown of the game, all those things. The Rockets seemingly are built to actually function well in that environment. It's a bad matchup for them for sure. This is a very good defensive team. And even last night, in a night where Steph Curry wasn't great, I thought Jimmy Butler, given the fact that he was clearly hobbled in that game, was excellent. And then, the same thing happened in game three, Seth, where you know what? Steph went off. There was no Jimmy Butler. You can't give up 33 or 34 points to Buddy Hield and Gary Payton Jr. You can't do that. Not at the level they were shooting. You know, there was an efficient 33 or 34 points. Similarly, last night, Podziemski couldn't miss in this game. Like, he was excellent. So they're getting contributions from other guys. That was Ryan Holland's big point on the broadcast last night, which I understand. He's like, even when Golden State was scoring, it's like, okay, but it wasn't Steph. You're getting the ball out of Steph's hands, thinking like, eventually, if you keep doing that, these guys are going to start missing.
Right.
They just never missed.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah. That's and honestly, I was trying to think back to the trade deadline when my feeling was, all right, these guys are making progress and doing good things with a young core, and let's see how you can ride these guys and what they'll do in the playoffs. I don't know if that was a completely idiotic take. It feels very tempting right now that, okay, I was overthinking it. Just hit the easy button and bring in a Jimmy Butler or a Kevin Durant, or whoever it might be.
Yep.
And you don't have to overthink it. Yeah, they'd be a better playoff team right now, but I don't know if that changes Jalen Green at all. It might make it easier for him in some regards, but there's when the pressure is on him right now because they're going to focus on him and Fred VanVleet, he just hasn't done, other than in the one game, he hasn't done anything to really show that he's going to rise up above your worst expectations.
Yeah, yeah. And I think depending on who the player is you're targeting, you know, if it's Devin Booker you're targeting, I think Jalen Green is part of that deal because there's overlap with what they play. Can I interest you in a Giannis Antetokounmpo? Because the odds are out on Giannis Antetokounmpo's next team. Now, keep in mind, they're about to get knocked out of the playoffs in fairly embarrassing fashion by Indiana. Damian Lillard just tore his Achilles in the last game, so the other star they brought in to play with him is presumably going to miss next season. And there's been smoke around Giannis wanting out of Milwaukee already, even before this postseason. The favorite to land Giannis Antetokounmpo is the Brooklyn Nets at 3-1. Number two on the board, Houston Rockets, 4-1 to land Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I like it. I'm just kind of wondering, like, what kind of a backcourt do I want next year? And how much does it really change things? I obviously, it would take pressure off of Van Vliet and Jalen Green. But yes, I do. Yes, I do want. I do want Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I guess where I'm veering towards is, you know, people are asking whether now you feel good about Jalen Green being traded away. I want Jalen Green traded away. That's my thing there. Mm-hmm. So now I've got an appetite for just, all right, if it's a swap for Devin Booker and whatever plus Jalen Green, yeah, I'm all for that.
Yeah, I think the thing about Giannis is, look, Giannis is a terrible free throw shooter. Giannis doesn't shoot threes. Giannis is he's a marvelous player, obviously. He's top four MVP every year for the last 6 or 7 years. He's going to be top four again this year. That said, maybe versus and he's 7 years younger than Kevin Durant, Giannis doesn't directly address what this offense is really bad at right now,
right?
Which is shooting.
Yeah.
You know, he does not improve your shooting. Now, maybe he improves your spacing, and guys who are okay shooters become better shooters. Maybe Reed Sheppard becomes more part of the mix next year. He's a great shooter, and maybe that's not. And obviously, maybe that's not the only move you make. You know, maybe you make a second move to go get some shooting here. But I'm with you. Like, especially if they go out in five in this thing, and that shouldn't be the whether you go out in five, six, or seven shouldn't be the difference in making a huge move like this. The difference should be, what does the whole thing look like? Even the game they won, Seth, you and I came in here the next day saying, didn't look great. You know, they won the game, but offensively, there's not sustainable things going on. That'd be fun, man. Giannis, he's only 30. I thought, Giannis feels older than 30 to me.
Does he?
He's been around forever.
Right. I know everybody's so young, though, when they come in now that
he just feels older.
And then people play until they're 47 now, too.
That's true.
Get ready for seeing him.
If we can get Giannis for another 17 years, yeah, let's go. Larry's in Stafford. He's, I'm sure, heated about the Rockets right now. What's up, dude?
What's going on, Sean, Seth? I'm beyond heated, man, because I stayed up to 1:30 watching that, man, and I've been a big Jalen Green supporter, man, because I just believe in youthful talent and, you know, everything about these leagues, whether it's the NBA or NFL, it's about youth and everything. But Jalen Green is if you're letting Jeremy Lin in 2014 outplay you, Jalen Green, that's a huge problem. Because Jeremy Lin went to Portland with James, and them boys gave Portland all they can handle. And you have not shown up in this Golden State series, and I can't understand why. And the bigger problem I have with Jalen is that once he's out of the mix and once he's mentally gone, he starts making all kind of mistakes. That was a closeout on Porzingis or whatever, Poirinski or whatever his name was, and he fouled the dude while he let him run past him, and it was a three-point play. So he makes all these stupid plays, and then because he's mentally out of the game, and I thought this was going to be the series that his ass was going to show up and play big boy ball, because everybody in the city and everybody across the league was like, Jalen is going to have an effect on his game. I don't know if I'm completely out on him, but if it's time to move on from him, that is going to be something that they have to look at, man, because if he can't give us if he had just given us double digits in these three games, the Rockets would have ended this series in four. That's how I know that's the issue. And the other big issue, I've always had a disliking for European players. I always have, because they don't play basketball like we do at the park in Houston. Alfred Sengun is one of the most lethargic-ass big men I've ever seen. And I've said this multiple times, and I know that I'm biased because I watched the greatest center of all time, Hakeem Olajuwon, play. But I've never seen a team guard Hakeem Olajuwon with a point guard and he not destroy their ass. Alfred Sengun is one of these dudes, these coming up short on shots and all this other stuff. It's crazy to me. And that's the kind of ball they ask play overseas, and that's why I've never liked it. I don't know what the hell his issue is with just getting his ass, his big ass on the block and getting down there punishing these boys, but he's making Draymond Green look like a star again, and that's making me sick to my stomach. Last, before I let y'all go, my Houston Texans did me a huge solid over the weekend. And I wasn't happy about not getting Golden. And me and Seth danced a little bit about the offensive line and wide receiver thing. But for them to come out of this draft with Tay and then both of them boys from Iowa State, now, fellas, we cooking with grease. And I'm all ready for a fist fry over there on Kirby and our hall.
I appreciate the call, Larry. Yeah, Şengün.
That's right.
I was just going to say, Şengün timid last night, like Larry was saying.
Timid.
Yeah, timid last
night. Timid. He's scared of Draymond Green.
Yep.
And you're giving us the worst version of Draymond Green now. He's emboldened, you know. Not quiet and meek Draymond Green
like we've never
but,
seen.
But even though the worst and loudest version of Draymond Green, thanks a lot.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for that. What Larry was referencing was that I felt like I really wanted the Texans to get offensive linemen. Larry really wanted wide receivers. He won, but I feel good about all three of those picks.
Yeah.
The two wide receivers and the offensive tackle.
Yeah, no question. People weighing in on what the Rockets should do. I don't want Kevin Durant any part of this team I root for, but I'm afraid now we're definitely going to have to go get him. I don't know if it's specific to Durant, but if they go out, you know, if they go out Wednesday and they lose this thing in five, and I think even if they end up losing this series and the whatever the closeout loss is looks like the other three losses have, the losses have all looked very similar. You know, the Rockets can't make free throws. Offense gets stuck in the mud. They get out tough, especially these two games in Golden State. I felt like Golden State was the tougher team in both those games. They're going to get eliminated at some point if they don't win this series. If it looks the same way, then I do think there's going to be a lot of Rocket fans that will not be on the run it back train, especially with all the they can go get anybody they want. That's the thing I think people need to understand. It's like, this isn't a mortgage the future situation. Now, they may end up trading one of your favorite players,
right?
But there's going to be several more guys. Like, this is not a gut the team and hope that you get a superstar and you get two other guys. You're not turning this into the 97 Rockets where you trade away Sam Cassell and Robert Horry and you're like, all right, we're going with three old dudes and we'll see what happens.
Now, the one thing that might change this, Sean, is if somehow they go on a three-game run and we see the absolute best version of Jalen Green.
That'd be great.
That's in the realm of possibilities. It's just way down there. It's way, way down there on the five boxes that you might check.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's E.
It is E. It is definitely E.
All the possibilities that could happen. They could lose the next game. They could win at home and then lose on the road. Whatever it might be. E is, yeah, Jalen Green goes off for three straight games.
Do you think, how many Rockets do you think we see quoted saying, we just got to take this one game at a time? We can only focus on Wednesday night. You know, we can only, because that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cliche because it's true.
Yeah.
And obviously at this time it's very, very true. Now it's a must
it's
win.
It's the classic 3-1. That's the classic.
Yeah, it's not even. Yeah, well, you can't. No. You won't see any. We'll take it one game at a time because this is a.
Just got to focus on.
It's an elimination game, right?
Yeah.
You got to focus on this game and not worry. If somebody says, do you think you can make a three-game run? Yeah, somebody will say, we have to focus on this game.
We got to focus.
Because what else are you going to say?
Yeah.
You know, like, no, well, actually, I've been thinking a lot about a potential game seven, and here's how I plan to approach that game seven.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you.
You know what, Sean? Sorry. This is what I hope. Okay, fine. Show me something in this series. Show me something, and it's that at the very least, when your backs are against the wall, that you want to fight. Like, are you capable of that? Are you capable of rising above and at least slugging it out, even though you know the enemy has outmanned you and you're out of ammunition and everything else? Can you show some fight?
Yes.
And if they win this game, then I'll tweak my depression a little bit.
If they win this game, man, they win on Wednesday. It makes for a fun Friday night. We'll see. Eventually, you got to win one in Golden State. You got to. So, backs against the wall for sure. All right, we've not talked about Shador today. The Shador fallout. Boomer Esiason on our sister station up in WFAN had an interesting report yesterday that I'd like to think sheds more light on why Shador Sanders fell into the fifth round for the people that are still incredulous over this. So we will get to that. And there's odds on the Cleveland quarterback room and how many games Shador is going to start for the Cleveland Browns. Does Seth Payne take the over or under? on this. We will have that for you coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast. Boy, a lot of you wanted to weigh in on the Rockets. We'll hit it again on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Putting a bow, I think, probably for now on the Shedeur Sanders talk. Still the biggest story from the draft this weekend. I saw a graphic, Seth, of the top 10 rookie jerseys that have been sold over the weekend on, you know, Fanatics or whatever. And it's funny, like the top six are picks 1, 3, 2, 5, and 7, and Shedeur. You know, it's like the top, it's like the top six jerseys sold on Fanatics that are five guys that were taken in the top seven of the draft, and Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah. I think that at the very least, I think you can talk with a little bit less. It doesn't have to be as charged necessarily, because as you step back and you get over the initial shock of him falling as low as he did, there's some things that make total and perfect sense based on the fact, based on the way Shedeur handled the pre-draft process. I think ultimately, really, the biggest issue was that Shedeur and Deion, really, in guiding Shedeur, treated him and were acting like he was a bona fide top three guy. And he's never been regarded, like, by the vast majority of people who cover the draft heavily as a guy like, oh yeah, in any draft, this guy's going to be top three.
No.
And because guys who are like that, guys that are bona fide top three picks, yeah, they can dictate terms and they can say, we only want to go to these teams, or we don't want to go to these other teams, or whatever. Like, it's, you know, within reason. But when you're a guy who's a fringe first rounder, it maybe should, a lot of people thought he should go in the second round, whatever it might be, and you start actively saying, we only want to play for certain teams and we're going to dictate terms and everything, it gets scary as hell for teams. And then you add on top of it whether or not they liked his personality or whatever. And it's just, it was a very unique situation, really, based on the way Shedeur handled the whole situation. Yep. And Deion.
Yes. Here was Boomer Esiason yesterday on WFAN talking about things that he was hearing during draft weekend.
Shedeur Sanders just torpedoed himself. His attitude off the field at the combine, his dad didn't help him either. You know, he was on podcast talking about, this is my son. If I can get him to where I want to get him to, I'm going to do that. But, you know, when you listen to this kid talk right prior or at the combine about, if you want a new culture in your locker room, I'm the guy to do that, I can turn it around. I mean, he's very high on himself. And I think he was very off-putting to many, many coaches and general managers in the league. And I'm telling you right now, and I know this after talking to three different personnel people in the NFL this weekend, they didn't even have him on their board. They took him off. And they took him off because the owner said, take him off. I don't want that guy. I don't want this entitled person on our team. And I don't blame him.
So there were teams that said, I don't want that guy. There were teams that Shedeur said, I don't want to go to that team. Like, it's... you start to add it up, and him sliding the way he did, well, becomes less of a, like, the math of the whole thing starts to add up for you, you know?
There's too many stories about Shedeur just flat out disrespecting people, actual NFL people. And I know one argument that people want to bring up, and it's a fair argument at least, is that, okay, well, gosh, it seems like it's better if you commit a crime than if you act like Shedeur. Yes, in a lot of respects, and it's been like that forever in the NFL, because most of the guys who have had off-field issues, Shedeur has not had off-field issues. The guys who have had off-field issues, they understand that they still have to be really good in the football offices and in the locker room, and that you gotta treat the coach with respect. You gotta treat the GM with respect. And there's just so many stories of Shedeur just flat out, like, sounding like a jerk to people, that, yeah, those teams aren't going to, especially at the quarterback position, they don't want to draft a guy who's, it's one thing if you're a jerk, you know, on the football field, or maybe you've got some interpersonal issues, but when you're a jerk to the actual face of the guy who's evaluating you, that's, and you're not as talented as a top three pick,
yeah,
then yeah, it's gonna be a weird, unique situation. It's very rare that you hear about quarterbacks acting the way people say that Shedeur was acting.
Yeah, I think a lot of things too, the off the field stuff, whatever, you know, if you commit a crime, whatever the case may be, is that NFL teams are gonna think, well, he did something stupid, it was a one time thing. It's not how you're wired. You know what, it's not how you act on a daily basis. Like, that is a more perpetual thing. And I think the thing to remember about Shedeur, he's not 18. He's 23 yeah. years old. Like that is an important distinction. Is that like he is at an age where you should be less inclined to just write it off as, well, not that you're not a different person at 30 than you are at 23, but I think a lot of the stuff he's doing that people want to write off are things that you would write off for a teenager, not a guy who's 23 years old, been to two colleges, and played a lot of football like he has.
Well, and part of it was I wanted to give them a little bit of a pass in Shadur and Deion and the way they handled the process, because okay, they thought more highly of him as a football prospect than a lot of teams did, because he's not a slam dunk top three player in any draft. But it doesn't really explain if it's true, the story about him pissing off Brian Daboll in a meeting.
Yeah.
Unless he just genuinely didn't want to go play for the Giants despite accepting the meeting with Brian Daboll and everything, that Brian Daboll, basically, it sounds like Shadur was unprepared for that meeting. Like, that's a level that goes above and beyond that, man, all right, there's something about this guy that really rubs people the wrong way. And to act like 32 different teams in the NFL is that it's just because they don't like a confident young man or whatever. Yeah. Like, dude, come on. No, there's a matter. You can be confident and still show respect to people.
Yes, absolutely. How is Lewis Riddick handling this the day after, Monday, the day after draft weekend is over? Here was Lewis Riddick on First Take yesterday on Shadur. Lewis Riddick, who did not handle things well during draft weekend because he's a big Shadur guy. How did he handle things yesterday?
What this came down to is somewhere in the off-the-field process, okay, when you're trying to assess someone's personal and football character and whether or not they feel as though it warrants a certain level or a certain price to be paid in order to acquire his services, people didn't feel that way. People just did not feel that way. As I said on Saturday to Mel Kiper, the draft is spoken. Whether we like it or not, the draft spoke. And somewhere along the line, people were not comfortable with the risk that would be associated with taking him in the first, second, third, or fourth round. That doesn't mean I agree with it. That doesn't mean that anybody agrees with it. That just means that that's what the teams felt. So now for him, he's going to have to go back and look at that process and say, hey, look, what was it during that process that somehow made these people, meaning the 32 teams, feel as though I wasn't worthy of being picked much higher than I was? Pay attention to those things. Make the kind of course corrections that he needs to, and now compete his rear end off to win the job, which he is fully capable of doing in Cleveland.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Lewis Riddick, considering how he was handling things during the draft, I think Lewis Riddick is kind of appropriately moved on.
He sounds like he's a guy who got a couple calls from people that told them exactly how things went in the pre-draft, that it's why exactly maybe some people felt the way they did.
Well, he's 10 steps ahead of Mel Kiper, who's probably still sitting here wondering how somebody with Shadur's accuracy got picked in the fifth round. Like, Mel Kiper was still spending Saturday incredulous that somebody with Shadur's football traits would still be there in the fourth round. Like, no, Mel, like, he's even writing articles about it after the second and third round on ESPN. Like, I can't believe that somebody that has this level of accuracy and this level of toughness. And it's like, it's not about any of these things, Mel. Like, you're out to lunch. It's not about this.
It's when you try to make a comparison, somebody earlier said, well, what if Will Levis, what if this had happened with Will Levis? Because Will Levis is a guy who's like a fringe first rounder, but he still goes at the front of the second round.
Yeah.
If Will Levis had acted like he was a slam dunk top three pick and said, nope, there's teams I don't want to play for or what have you, it would have freaked people out.
Yeah.
And it would have been, and that's what you have to understand. Nobody acts like this. Like, it doesn't matter who they are, what they look like, or anything. Guys who are not bona fide, going to be top of the draft, like, they don't just actively stiff arm. They might not go to, when guys are almost, when guys are guaranteed to go to the top 10, they might only meet or work out for certain teams or what have you. That happens all the time. Shadur's not that caliber of a prospect. And he was acting like he was one of those guys who's a slam dunk number one overall pick, who, by the way, none of those guys act that way. And even like Eli, in the way he actually conducted himself and everything, was not acting that same way. But this belief that people are putting out there, which is 100% false, that Archie Manning didn't get any criticism for injecting himself in that process. Are you kidding me? That was a hot debate topic for a long time, and still a source of hatred for the Manning family. I still make jokes about it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like the way that Archie Manning inserted himself into the process. But at the very least, Eli Manning was a slam dunk guy that was going to be a top three pick in the draft.
Do you think? Go ahead, finish your thought.
No, that's all right.
No. Does it make it worse that Shador is a quarterback? Like, if you're an NFL team and you've got a defensive end who's kind of got these quirky qualities to him where he thinks maybe a little more highly of himself, but you bring him into the building and it's like, all right, well, it's a defensive end. He's got good talent, you know?
Yeah.
Does it make it like that? I think there's an element to quarterback where you want your quarterback to have some degree of self-awareness to go with it. That's beyond the other positions on the field.
No, when it comes to especially, I don't have as much of an issue with him talking about himself as a culture changer or anything. Just because, okay, if you believe that, it's, I think the fact that he almost, when he would talk that way, it was almost like he was going to go tell these grown men how to behave and act and how to be a winner, because I did it. Like, what'd you do? I won at a smaller conference where we had like five guys who were way better than everybody else. And then I went to a bowl game in 1 year at Colorado.
Yeah.
That's what honestly was bothering me, was I didn't know what his standards were for what, like, actually. No. He kept talking about how they've done it over and over again. I mean, what did you do?
He acted like they won the national championship.
You had a winning record and lost and got crushed in a bowl game?
Yeah.
Like, what did you individually, sure. But as far as changing the team and everything, yes, you turned a program around. But that's not necessarily all that special, and that was more about your father than you.
Over under number of Shador starts, real quick here, Seth, this season, 2.5. You think he starts more than or less?
I would
less
take the
than?
Over on that.
I would too.
I'd take the over.
That feels very low.
I am very excited, genuinely, just to see how he does. I don't want him to go down in flames or anything. I'd like to see. It's kind of an experiment now to where, okay, this was a very unique draft and pre-draft process. And it is, as Lewis Riddick was pointing out, he needs to evaluate, okay, I really did something that really angered a lot of teams or that was a put off to all these teams. I got to change some things. And if he can change those things, then he's got a chance to compete.
He's the highest profile quarterback, rookie quarterback, whose range that I can remember, whose range of outcomes ranges from could get cut to could be the day one starter. And anything in between, practice squad, backup, like they're all in play for Shador Sanders. And I don't think you can say that about other guys that, you know, that have his level of profile. Obviously, you can say it about fifth rounders, but like his profile. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. What are the experts saying about the Texans draft class? We'll get to some of your texts as well. Who are you guys blaming? Who are people pointing the finger at the most for the Rockets being behind 3-1 in the first round of the Western Conference playoffs? We will discuss that coming up next. Payne and Pendergast, we'll get the draft report cards here in just a second.
Well, just since there was something, because Larry and Stafford mentioned Jeremy Lin earlier, and and then we were talking about Shador Sanders. It just reminded me of when things are really, really hot and heated on Twitter and whatnot. One of my favorite things to do with Jeremy Lin was to take Jeremy Lin, a quote about something he said about himself where he needed to do better, and then just rephrase it a little bit and put it out, and then get attacked as a Jeremy Lin hater. Like Jeremy Lin would say, like, I need to make better decisions when I'm driving, on when to kick out, whatever it might be. You know, like, maybe not jump in the air before I know where I'm going with the ball. And you could just rephrase it a little bit, say the exact same thing that Jeremy Lin himself said, and you would be deemed a hater. And that's where it is with Shador Sanders. There's almost no opinion you can have about Shador Sanders where you're not being castigated as the worst person in the world.
I think it's probably a smaller group than the majority that are like,
that are people that are skeptical of Shador Sanders. Or?
No, the defenders of Shador and the defenders of Jeremy Lin. I don't know
Shador. I think it's pretty. It's interesting because there's a lot of people that are married to their pre-draft takes that flat out spent a lot of time saying that anybody who predicts that Shador won't go in the first round is an idiot. Mm-hmm. You're an idiot if you think that, or you're just clickbaiting. And it's hard for them to reverse course and say, he didn't go in the first round, but it's not for the reasons you said he wasn't going to go in the first round.
Yeah.
No, it can't possibly be.
Yeah.
All those very things that you said would happen, even though they happened. No, I refuse to believe it. Yeah.
All right. So Mel Kiper, I think, is one of the guys you're describing there. So how do we process then Mel Kiper being so not just ridiculously off on the Shedeur Sanders thing, because he wasn't alone in that, but he is, I think, the poster child for hanging on to his opinion and like a branch on a raging river. Like, yeah. I will go down with the ship on this one. And yet he gave the Texans a B+, which is above the GPA that the rest of the draft community gave them. He gave the Texans a nice solid B+ for their draft here. For what it's worth, and there's a chart that shows all the experts and what their grades were for all the teams. And I like it because it boils it down to a GPA. That's easy to understand. The GPA for the Texans was 2.93. Would we be, if we were Nick Caserio's parents, Seth, and Nick Caserio came home with a report card going into this draft, and he comes home with a GPA of a 2.93? Are we going out to dinner with him? Is he getting grounded?
No, he can do better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just gets a stiff talking to, maybe?
Yeah. And now, you know, most GMs, every GM I can actually say, every GM thinks that the immediate grades of a draft immediately afterwards are largely bogus and dumb. You just never know. And yet, I kind of like the image of maybe somebody in Nick Caserio's family feels differently. Yeah. And they're kind of casual about things. And they just open up the paper because they still read the paper. And they say, let's see what little Nicky did. A B+.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck? No. That's unacceptable, Nicky.
What does a 2.93 equate out to? Like a C+? Like a
2.93. Yeah, that would be a...
Like a C, yeah, like a high C,
plus.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. C+. Oh, yeah. No, he's not a C student. Yeah.
He should be.
You're way better than a C student.
You should be doing better. Well, this is probably why he feels this way about draft report cards.
Yeah, I think anything that's said outside the building is just noise. So it doesn't really affect our focus, our preparation. So, like, we're just focused on our team. We're just focused on improvement, and we're focused on the work. So what people, it's kind of like the draft. There, you know, we go through the weekend. You know, we're going to have on Monday, right, or Sunday afternoon, draft grades, right? I mean, it's the most ridiculous concept that I've ever heard of. Like, the players haven't even been in the building yet, and we're making an assessment about their performance.
What if you're in the first year on a job as a GM, and the day after the draft, you feel like you did a pretty good job. You're sitting there in the office at 5 a.m., and all of a sudden you get a FaceTime call, and it's the owner, and he's irate at the draft grades.
Because of the report cards?
Did you see what Bleacher Report said?
Okay.
What the hell? I didn't hire you for this.
Which owner would be the most likely one to do that, and why is it Woody Johnson of the Jets?
Woody Johnson, whose kids are feeding him all the negative draft grades and what have you. Yeah.
I mean, they make decisions based on Madden scores. You know that
Woody Johnson wants to win the immediately post-draft draft grade.
Dude, he comes in on Monday morning with his cup of coffee and says, Gladys, because his secretary's name is Gladys. Gladys, where is my draft report card chart that I get every Monday following the draft? How is he feeling about his draft? The Jets 13th on the GPA list. The Jets scored a 3.18 GPA according to
the they're better than the Texans. I'll never live this shame down.
The Texans,
my God.
The Texans 2.93 is good for 21st. So they are in the they're in the middle of the third quartile.
What do you think, Woody Johnson? What sports website does he go to that you thought was defunct? But now it's
Yard Barker. Yeah. He goes to Yard Barker.
He gets the last remaining paper version of the Sporting News or something.
Yes, yes. Yeah. God, I miss the Sporting News. That was good stuff back in the day. So 2.93 for the Texans. Not too worried about it. I'm cool with their draft. I would give it their draft a solid B to B+ if I were.
I don't. I fall into that category of, man, it's impossible to tell with the draft until immediately afterwards. You know, Charlie Casserly was lambasted for the 2006 NFL, the Texans draft, and then that ended up being one of the best drafts in Texans history, largely just because they drafted Mario Williams instead of Reggie Bush or Vince Young. They were lambasted for it, and they ended up getting a bunch of really good players out of that
one.
That's true. I know what people are thinking if you're a youngster. Charlie Casserly ran that draft and then was fired for having one of the best drafts in Texans history, on into the future. And then Rick Smith ran the next one.
Yeah.
Rick Smith got hired in spring or summer of that year.
The Cleveland Browns are 9th on this list of report card grades. Guess what grade they got from Mel Kiper Jr.?
Oh, an F?
A plus. No, he's
oh,
a Shador.
Oh, because
Shador
they got Shador.
They
oh,
got
of course.
Shador,
yes,
yeah, course. Yeah.
Yes. They
yeah.
traded out of the opportunity to draft Shador, and then they drafted Shador later on.
A,
so they get an A plus.
Plus. New England, by the way, there's probably some of you wondering. These were the top five teams, according to the experts, with the draft grades. New England won, and Ted texted me yesterday, Ted Johnson. They're super excited. They're super excited about New England's draft. He was also excited about Casario's draft. Giants, 2. Seattle, 3. Kansas City, 4. Philadelphia, 5. It must be nice to be Kansas City and Philadelphia where, like, the floor, like, it would be interesting if they just experimented one year and just started drafting, like, robots and appliances and things like that instead of people to see if they could get below a B+, either of those teams.
The thing with the Patriots draft is that the top three players are very easy to get excited about because Will Campbell, the offensive tackle, is Will Campbell. Doesn't look great in a suit or like a guy that would get drafted that high in the draft, but he's a very, very good football player. Travion Henderson, super easy to get excited about Travion. If the Texans had drafted, they draft Travion Henderson with the 38th pick in the draft, which feels to, if you know, you're drafting a running back in the second round instead of the first, but he very easily could have gone in the first round.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been incredibly surprised if the Texans had drafted Travion Henderson.
You predicted, well, you didn't predict it, but you brought up that possibility, strong possibility, on Friday morning when they were picking 34th, and Nick had said that they still had a player on the board they were thinking about at 25. You thought it might be Travion Henderson.
Yeah, so, and then Kyle Williams, the wide receiver, is one of those guys that, you know, another dark horse favorite of guys that can go in the second or third round as a wide receiver these days. People, a lot of people saying like, hey, just keep an eye on Kyle Williams, keep an eye on. So it's, I understand Patriots fans being excited about that.
Yeah, yeah, Kyle Williams. A lot of Jalen Noel, Kyle Williams similarities, I think. You know, like undersized guys, very twitchy. A lot of people like them, but not enough to take them higher than that.
And when you have a second-year quarterback and you draft the stud offensive tackle, that always feels good for fans.
Yeah.
Especially if you looked at what Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter were doing in that Patriots game to poor Drake May.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and those and that offensive line was bad.
They were destroying those guys.
That was bad. Text message back to the Rockets. Şengün is good, but he leaves a lot of points on the table. He had 31, easily could have had 40. That's my point. Like, Alperen Şengün was timid, short-arming shots. He got 17 points while Draymond was out of the game for 12 minutes, and he had 14 the rest of the way on completely inefficient shooting. Şengün, even with 31 points last night, is a huge, not the reason, but a reason they lost that game. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula are in the house. Reggie's got his cowboy hat on.
He's got his cowboy hat. Looks good.
You can pull off that look easily.
It just makes me feel better after the Rockets game yesterday.
I was going to ask you, is there a reason you're wearing the cowboy hat?
So it is my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, moms. And so I was talking to her this morning, and she, you know, after wishing her happy birthday and everything, she's like, we got to talk about your Rockets. And I was like, damn it, that's how we're starting today. So I had that. And then as I was getting ready to leave the apartment, I pick up my backpack, and right next to it was the hat. So I put it on, and I was just like, bleep it. We're wearing, man. I'm getting on my Van Lathan today.
Yeah, you need to do it more often. Oh. It's a good-looking lid, man.
You were talking to your mom. I thought there was going to be something like she used to dress you up like her little cowboy or something. She tortured you when you were younger because was she an outfit mom? Did she put you in outfits?
I mean, when I was really young. I'm talking about pre 5 years old. Which
not when you were a teenager or anything.
No,
she didn't have a special Easter outfit for you or anything on into your early teens.
No, but she did teach me very early how to make sure that you're wearing a suit and look nice. So at that point, I had taken it on myself.
That looks
as you
good.
Can evidence and see by all the t-shirts and joggers.
T-shirt that says "Unserious."
That's right.
Ironically, across the front of it. By the way, Crosstalk sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing. So who are you guys pointing the finger at? Last night, who or what from this game are you pointing the finger at?
Well, the obvious one is Jalen Green, but we're going to talk about this a little bit. Ime's been off the hook on several things here.
Ooh,
that I think he needs to.
You're going after the elite coach, huh?
I love him as we've well established on this show. I really, really like him.
But to the point of calling him elite,
to the point of calling him elite. But I think there are a couple things that the head coach has to do.
That's an interesting topic. Like, who, if they go on to lose this series, and if they lose it in the fashion they've been losing these games, who with this team, I'm not going to say on this team, but, you know, the players and the coaches, who has your opinion changed the most on?
Oh, that's a good one.
You know what I mean? Like,
Let's go ahead and put that one in the bucket. I like that.
Yeah, because I think, like, to me, I'm with you. I think Ime, I think there's been things you can point at Ime for. You know, Jabari Smith needs more minutes, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And he's not getting them. This and that. I thought Jalen being out for most of the fourth quarter was a significant step in the right direction, just in terms of, like, the desperation last night.
Yeah.
But I think they could lose this series, and my opinion of Ime Udoka will not change. My opinion of Jalen Green is changing drastically right now.
Because
he had changed it drastically in a positive way during the season.
He's the obvious one.
Yeah.
But I'll give you one example of some of the things I want to talk about anyway. You know, people are talking about Jalen Green.
Sorry, that little phrase in there was hilarious. Sorry, continue.
People talk about Jalen Green. Oh, you can't do that. You can't not show up.
Right.
Well, you can't start the first and second half completely on roller skates.
16-4 in the first
half. Can't do that. And who's that on?
18-1 in the second half. Probably Ime more than anything else, right? Like, they didn't come out ready in either half.
Exactly.
Like, extremely
That's
not
just
ready.
One example I'm going to throw out
there. Yep. I think it's good. Can't blame Ime for the free throw shooting.
No. There are so many things that were bad.
Yeah. and they lost on the last possession of the game. Yeah. That's the most frustrating thing is they're the more talented team in this series. They've got more talent on this team.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of stuff that you see with a young basketball team.
Yeah, so especially the stat that I read this morning that I just have not been able to get out of my head. I had to write it down one more time.
Mm-hmm.
Golden State Warriors 22-10 in clutch minutes.
Yeah,
I had that stat too.
Yeah.
Well, at least that's something you guys can talk about with each other. Yeah. What's the question of the day?
So, what happens in a fight between one gorilla and 100 Jalen Greens?
That's the question of the day.
That's right. Or insert your favorite Houston sports.
That is a looking for texts.
Yes, it is. I said you got to be creative on this one.
Yeah, Lopez really wanted to fish this week, so he's like, let's get started early.
All he knows how to do is break bones and bite people.
What I said is only 25% of the Jalen Greens would show up.
Oh, I like that. That, by the way, the AI depiction of that homie,
it changed my mind.
It's totally scary. I'm like, 100 guys. What are we talking about here?
I think the answer is easy, and they could totally take him. It's how many people are you willing to sacrifice?
Yes.
And who's willing to be on the front line? That's also one of
the big one, Reggie.
We're just gonna do it all for the sake of the human side. The first. 50 of y'all are getting out of here.
Yeah, you got to promise 99 virgins in heaven or something to that one. That's and then you could suffocate him. You could easily suffocate him as long as 100 people dogpile. It's just that you're also going to suffocate like 20 human beings.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
That's the only chance you have is to just crush him and suffocate him by also suffocating every mammal at the bottom of
that pile.
That's
right. There needs to be a hierarchy, almost like a scene in Braveheart, where the really sacrificable ones are on the front line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the degree of importance is how many rows back you are.
The luckiest ones are the ones, the very first ones, because they'll have their necks snapped in half immediately.
It'll happen quick.
But everybody else on top that suffocates them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
So we're depending on either human cooperation or human, manipulation.
Right. Exactly. There's got to be odds out on this, by the way. Somebody has to.
Ooh, I will go looking
out
for this.
Odds out on who wins. It's a good supplement to your question. I love this question. 100 Jalen Greens versus a gorilla.
Well, did you see the Texans social media also said who wins between one gorilla and 100 Brian Cushings?
Okay.
And now we're getting to some interesting territory.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
Steven Adams?
Steven Adams.
Current man. Steven Adams?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. See, that's a good question.
You know what I mean? Like, I love Steven Adams and his ability to do this. We can see the slowdown a little bit.
Yeah. One Steven Adams versus 100 Jalen Greens.
Wow.
This is going to be a hell of a segment.
Can't wait. 10:40, right?
10:40.
Big in the loop fan. All right. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and Godspeed as you tango with War Daddy Power Ends.
Thank you. That's why you gotta listen to the whole show.
Yes,
man. Know
absolutely.
What the hell Seth's talking about. Alright, we are done. I will river dance my way out of this.
Yeah,
studio.
I was ashamed of you.
I was ashamed. Wow.
You lived through the 90s. Everybody knew about river dance.
Sean didn't know who about the Lord of the Dance and Michael Flatley.
I could have maybe given you that because that's a very river dance was just littered
everywhere.
Across the cultural zeitgeist.
Oh,
it was everywhere.
I had plenty of people send me YouTubes of what it is. I'm like, yeah, okay, I know that. I didn't know that's what it was called.
They had a Vegas run.
Well, it was before I started going to Vegas on the regular. I don't know what to tell you.
You were under a rock.
Hey, for all my faults, can I tell you that Crosstalk is sponsored by D&M Auto Lease?
You're back in my
can
good graces.
Can I mention that to you? Thank you. All right, we are done. We're out of time. You're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM HD2, Houston, an Odyssey Sports Station.